Need some motivation on your Chinese business endeavour? May be curious about what the Chinese business environment is all about? Or want to laugh out loud listening to war stories on the ground in China? Then this is your show, China Business Cast.
Hey, hey, hello everybody. This is Shlomo and Mike here again. And today we're on episode number 37. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Shlomo. How's it going?
I'm good. I don't know if you guys paid attention to this, but we had to push our publishing calendar in 1 week because this has been some crazy few weeks. And especially last week, Mike had his conference and was busy organizing it. And I guess he's now recuperating, isn't it?
Slowly recuperating. Yeah. It was an amazing conference.
How was it?
Yeah. It was a cross-border summit and first one of this size I've done. And, was really nervous, of course, coming into it. And then the last week, as a lot of other events I've heard, you know, it's always just overwhelming. We got a lot of press and, you helped to spread the word and people were really clamoring to get in. And we had to sell out. We had to close the ticket sales a day or two before just because there wasn't enough seats. So it was sold out. We got on a Hong Kong TV show and everything. So people really, really enjoyed it. And, looking forward to doing it next year. And we even launched a membership site for it so people can stay in touch afterwards. And it's really going great.
Wow, great. After all this pressure, I'm sure you need this recuperating. And I hope that you'll be ready for next year.
Yeah.
I want to see you with all this.
Yeah, exactly. I have to get you there too. And maybe you can share or at least network with some of the... It was really... People really liked the crowd. We had it was English event in Shenzhen and there's not many to choose from. So people really were happy to get to network with other people and learn and have an English business conference.
Awesome.
So it was great.
Awesome. I'm getting ready for coming to RISE, which is the end of May in Hong Kong. So I'll get to see you again. And along with a trip to Beijing, as I mentioned on Startup Noodle, this year I need to miss GMIC Beijing, which I've been going to for the past 3 or even 4 years. But instead of that, I'll meet other people in RISE and old people also from China coming to RISE as well. So that's going to be nice. And, we spoke before the recording and you told me that you're actually helping organizing it. So what's your part?
I don't want to take too much credit, but, one of the co-organizers, my good friend, Casey Lau, and they always have a pub crawl the night before the official start of the conference. I was a pub crawl captain last year, so I will be a pub crawl captain again the night before the conference, and it's hopefully you can make it. So it was a fun one. It was right in the heart of like downtown Bar Street in Long Kwai Fong, and basically attendees can go, and I'm in charge of a group of attendees to take them around different bars, and I hold a big sign of RISE with a number on it and kind of guide people around different bars and try to not lose as many people, but people get a little bit crazy and get lost. At least that's what happened last year. But we're kind of like glorified tour guides, bar captain people, and it's a fun time.
Cool. Well, I'm landing that very morning, so I'll be totally jet lagged, but I'm totally in.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it'll be great. It's hard. It's just overwhelming. The conference, I think, will be even bigger this year, but. Last year was the first one they had done and it was massive. I mean, took over like the whole city, it seems, and it'll be another great one this year.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, looking forward to see this. So this week we have a guest. His name is Gerald Bonner and he's the author of Sharpening China Talent. It's a book he's published in June 2015. He's a TEDx speaker. And we spoke with him about talent in China and all these nitty-gritty and interesting stuff. So we'll jump in.
Yeah, let's go.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to another China Business Cast. Today, we're happy to host Gerald Bonner. He's the author of Sharpening China's Talent and also a TEDx speaker in Shanghai. He lives in Shanghai since 2003 and built a successful corporate coaching and consulting business also in Shanghai. And except for our guests, we also have, of course, Mike, as always. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Shlomo. What's up?
I'm good.
Life is good.
Gerald, how are you? Welcome.
I'm good today. Thank you, Shlomo. Thank you, Michael. It's good to talk to you guys again.
Awesome.
Pretty interesting down here in Shanghai these days.
Yes, from our previous calls, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're really passionate. Yeah, we've known each other for quite a few years now, Gerald, and I'm glad to have you on the show. So you're definitely passionate about helping others learn about the six competencies for success in the 21st century. And, you know, whether it become core skills as individuals. So helping companies manage behaviors and with aligning culture, can you kind of maybe expand on that or help introduce what you do to our listeners?
Yeah, sure, Michael, I'd be glad to. Basically, as I was preparing for this speech, I just realized I need to change my LinkedIn profile title to actually O to Social Influencer. Because after thinking about what you said, I realized that, you know, what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to help people manage their social influencing ability. And how do they do that online? And how do they do that in real life, specifically for work? So there's actually three parts to what I do. First, what I do is I communicate and work with my corporate clients and help them understanding that their company culture has a message, and they have to manage that message, and they have to understand how well do they manage that message internally, and how do they manage it to the outside marketplace. And usually that message then comes with a set of behaviors. This is where companies like Zappos, Alibaba, Amazon, Google, those guys all have their company cultures. And, you know, that to make that culture happen, you have to have a behavior. And so then after that, I try to work with their managers to help them understand how does the manager's own personal behavior align with the culture behavior of the company, and how well can the manager read his employees' behavior that and have the employees then adjust their behaviors so that they too align with the company culture. Because at the end of the day, if everybody's not aligned, they go off on different tangents and different directions. So basically, you want to be able to say, our company does, our culture is X. To make X happen, our employees have Y behavior. And then how to get each of the employees to do Y behavior is what I do, is I sit down with the managers, or I sit down with them. And actually, the managers are employees of the general manager. And so I say to the employees, here's how you influence your boss. And here's the behaviors you have to have. And sometimes if you can't influence your boss, then you have to be able to take care of yourself and make sure you're comfortable with who you are in the environment you're in. So that's what I do.
I see. So when we actually spoke before this call, I had very specific questions for you about prospecting, because I've heard this over and over again. And what I mean by that is identifying if a person you're speaking with, because you're dealing with people, so a person you're speaking with or researching on would be able to help you achieve your goals. And this is obviously related to companies and startups and also for other people, but we're talking about building a company or a startup here. So how can people do better prospecting for their company? And what are maybe a few guidelines for that?
Okay, so when you say people prospecting, you're saying, how do I research the company so I know I want to work there? Is that correct?
I'm actually speaking about the other way around. So a company would want to hire employees, so it really matches its culture. It would be a right fit, okay. Talent, things like that.
Yeah, okay. So, and this is a big task, and I think HR is not close to doing it. And I don't think most managers are close to doing this yet. What you really have to do is, if I'm a hiring manager or I'm HR, is I really have to talk to the employees and figure out what turns them on and what gets them passionate and what they really are excited about. So I'll give you an example. One of my clients is a clothing retailer, and the HR manager said, we have a hard time finding people, you know, that stick around sometimes it's in certain positions. Or if we want to attract new entry-level positions, how do we, you know, the same question you asked, how do we know? If we can't pay them, you know, what the Gap pays them, and if we can't pay them what Zara pays them, and we can't pay them what, you know, the big clothing, Brooks Brother pays them, how do we get them to come work for us? And so I said, well, what you want to do is you want to find somebody who's passionate about working in the fashion industry, and that's where they want to work. So if they want to work in the fashion industry and they want, they're into the glitz and the glamour, then they're willing to make a sacrifice on some other conditions of their employment career. So if I'm into fashion and I like the clothes that my company designs, then the discount that I can get to going to the store and buying the clothes is going to be a benefit that the company can give me that I would like. Whereas if I'm just looking for a job and I don't care about fashion, then you can say to me, oh, you get 25% off our clothes. And you're going to go like, well, I don't care about your clothes. I mean, I just want a job. Right. So you're not going to be in this case, that employee would not be a good brand ambassador, because that employee wouldn't go to the store, wouldn't take advantage of the discounts, and won't be seen in public wearing the company's clothes. And if they're not seen, then, you know, and that's a way to promote and increase sales, because you're actually walking around wearing the clothes that your company manufactures and sells. And if you can't do that, well, then you're not a good brand ambassador. You're not proud of who you are. Like, I know some friends through my Toastmasters network, and this guy loves Nike, and he works at Nike, and he's happy to be working at Nike, and he's happy to be an athlete, and he's happy to be healthy, and he's proud of it, right? So I'm sure Nike can get some things out of him that maybe if he went to work for just a clothing store wouldn't be able to get from him.
You can't say that every employee is passionate about the company he's working for. I mean, that's very hard to achieve.
You're absolutely right. That's very hard to achieve. And yet in the future, that's going to make a difference. And so the company's on the cutting edge of that difference is like Zappos and Amazon. Amazon and Zappos, and Amazon took this strategy from Zappos. They have a strategy that says at the end of a certain amount of time, they sit the employee down and they say, so how do you like working here? Are you happy? Here's X amount of money. You can resign right now, take the cash, walk out the door. And 10% of the employees take the cash and quit right then and there. And Amazon and Zappos are totally happy to have those people out of their company, because they know that these people are not going to be helping. Yeah. So it's, you know, that's how you do it. Now, can most companies do that? No. Can most companies think that way? No, they don't. So at the end of the day, if you're interviewing people and you're not interviewing people that are passionate, well, then at 5 o'clock, they're going home. They're going to complain about the overtime. They're not going to recommend their friends to come work there, or they're not going to recommend people in the industry to come work there, which means everything else in the company is harder to do.
Interesting. So, you know, corporate training is something you seem to have a lot of experience in, and we know others in the field. How what kind of skills are required, you know, to do that type of business?
Well, to do corporate training and to be a corporate coach, the first skill you need to do is you've got to love learning. In our field, most of my peers, whether they're coaches or trainers, we love learning. We love to learn new things and try new things. So we're very big on taking intelligent risk, and we're very big on trying new things and failing. So if you're not comfortable with trying new things, you're not going to be good in that training industry. Another thing about you really need to be comfortable standing in front of people and being vulnerable and being able to make mistakes and being able to really make them think about how they're going forward. In our industry, we have what we call briefcase trainers. Briefcase trainers show up. They take out the PowerPoint slide that was made by some organization somewhere in the world, and it's been tailored for China, and they go through the slides. They say, thank you very much, and they walk out and they leave. Good trainers will say, if you don't do this, your life won't be different. And good trainers will push the participants to think hard, and good coaches will hold their coachees' feet to the fire and say, if you're not changing, then you're not going to – things won't be any different, and it's up to you to make the change, not me. So the best way to start your own corporate training is to really find a niche or an area that you're passionate about. I always tell people this regardless what field they are. If they're not willing to get up in the morning and do the work that it takes to get the job done, whether or not they're getting paid, then they shouldn't do it. So you really have to be getting up in the morning and saying, okay, what's my next book to read? What's my next podcast to listen to? I listen to 2 or 3 podcasts a week. Okay. I mean, most people think I'm crazy, but I listen to podcasts. I love watching Malcolm Gladwell on YouTube. I listen to him interview people. I love listening to Brené Brown. I love listening to Adam Grant. If they don't have that kind of – if you can't get into that and be excited about hearing something new, you're not going to be a good trainer. And another good thing about coaching and the best way to start is to find out what does the market really need? So, you know, if you were to turn around and say, I want to be a presentation skills trainer, you're going to really have a tough time because the margins in that side of the business are shrinking and there's so much competition to that. Whereas if you say you want to be a social influencer like I do, there's lots of potential because nobody really knows what it's like to – what is social influencing? How do you take influencing from online and how do you take it offline? I mean, most people don't even know what social influencing online is. So you really got to know, you know, what is different about you compared to everybody else, whether it's NLP, whether it's neurolinguistics, whether it's, you know, how the brain works. There's all kinds of different ways, whether you focus on different types of coaching methodologies. You have to know which one you're into because you can't just do them all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're just teaching people to social influence their bosses. That's a good skill to have.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, it is a social influencing your boss is really tough. I mean, everything we do is social. So you have to really tailor your message correctly to your boss. You have to know what your boss wants and you have to know what he's into. And if you don't know what he's into, then you can't influence him.
I see. Do you think that the corporate training or coaching in China is different than other places in the world because of the different culture? I don't know. Your call.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The first thing is that in China, it's mostly in Chinese. They're not really – they're tending to drift away from English coaching and training right now. They want to stick with the Chinese people. And I have no problem with that for the majority of the workforce. That said, if you want to be a global leader, you have to be able to communicate in English. You can't expect to report back to corporate headquarters in Europe or the United States or South America without strong language skills and being able to, you know, paint the picture of the environment in their language. A couple of years ago, the Chinese company Shuangwei, which is the pork manufacturer and sausage and hot dog and ham company, bought an American company called Smithfield's Pork and Sausage. And the interesting thing about it is like Smithfield's from North Carolina. And so now you all of a sudden this big Chinese company spent $2.3 billion on this merger. And who's gonna report to who? You're going to send a Chinese guy to Eastern North Carolina. That's going to be a really tough, tough environment for that person. And if you're expecting the North Carolinians of East Carolina and Eastern Carolina to report to Chinese people, well, those Americans are going to need 5 to 7 years of Chinese language skills to be able to communicate effectively. So they've got to speak to somebody in China in English. So that's an example of how leaders have to be having the English skills, because you can't wait 5 to 7 years for an American in a company you just bought out to develop his language skills or her language skills. You have to have somebody on the Chinese side that can speak English. So that's the one place where it's really different. Another way it's really different is, you know, Chinese are just very secondary to wanting to take risk in changing, and you really, really got to push them to see the difference. And they won't come to their – in a lot of cases, they won't come to their coaching sessions prepared, at least the clients I work with. You know, it's only the top ones that come prepared. The average ones don't come prepared. And then, you know, you say to them, well, you're not prepared. They're like, well, what do you want me to do? And you're like, well, I want you to try something. And so they're not really good at trying things, which is why they have a coach in the first place, because you're brought in to get them to try things and take initiative, be more proactive. So those are some of the differences in China. And then, of course, once something catches fire in China, everybody mm-hmm. is going to try to, you know, follow you and steal your business. I had a really good, interesting friend. He had a financial accounting company, and, you know, he had about 30 people sign up per program to where he taught them, he prepared them for, you know, the United States GAAP accounting tests. And he owned the business for about 2-3 years. He was the only one doing it. But once people found out that he was doing it and he was profitable about it, then others stepped in and started doing it, and they stole his market share, and he couldn't fill his classrooms anymore. So he moved to something else. So that's the couple of things you have to really be careful about in China, is once people see it's profitable, they're definitely gonna step on your toes.
So corporate training in other countries is a totally different animal. They do other stuff, not so much about the culture, perhaps.
No. I think they do culture. I think the way it's different is who is being coached and who's being trained. I mean, I've only lived in China and the United States, so I can't say what would happen in Israel. I can't say what happened in England. That said, all business is pretty much the same, right? So you want companies steal clients, and people that see, you know, niches catching on and catching fire is going to be, you know, really good. They're going to steal your clients. That's why you got to be like Simon Sinek or Adam Grant. You got to always be coming up with something new, because if you're not coming up with something new, you're just going to be, you know, you're not going to be able to compete, because people are going to turn around and steal and take your concepts and ideas and reword them and sell them as theirs. If you take me, for instance, I mean, like I said, I've just changed my title on my LinkedIn to online to offline social influencing, because social influencing is not something I said I did 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, I just said I was a senior HRBP strategist. Well, now I'm saying I'm an O2O. Well, at the end of the day, because of how I do it, I'm still a social influencing person, but I don't focus on my HRBP anymore, because there's so many HRBPs out there. So that's how you have to keep changing, because although if you don't change your cars, even Maserati changes cars, right? They have cars, and every 2 or 3 years they change the model, and they change the interior, they change the exterior, because if they don't refresh the car, people are not going to buy it. Sales starts to drift and dwindle. So okay. You have to keep changing, you have to keep adjusting yourself.
Got it. So yeah, I mean, about staying ahead, obviously social media is basically in full force in the workplace as well as, you know, personal lives. How about like with job seeking and differentiating, how do you see that? And do you think it's a part of China? Is it different? I mean, I'm feeling there's definitely differences, like you were talking earlier, between China and the West, but I guess just generally social media and maybe job seeking. What is your take on that?
So just to be sure, when you say job seeking, now you're talking about from the candidate side, right?
Yeah, about the person applying for a job.
Yeah. So the person applying for a job, it's quite interesting you asked me this question, because just last week, one of the groups I'm in on LinkedIn, the guy created a WeChat group for jobs. And he's like, oh, you can find your jobs on WeChat now through our WeChat groups. And I just went, oh, here, all that's really happened is the black hole has moved to mobile phone. So for those people out there don't know what the black hole is. The black hole is the application tracking system where jobs are posted. You go online and you fill out the application. You upload your resume and hit send, and you hope somebody calls you. And you know, 99.9 times nobody does, and you don't even get thank you for applying. So that's the black hole. So all they've really done is move the black hole from the desktop to mobile. Because they think they can reach you more, and it's just an advertising game. You know, they can reach you, they can get the word out to a bigger mass, but you know, having 50,000 people apply for a job does you, the job seeker, no good. And that is one thing that is happening in China, is, you know, you could get 40,000, 50,000 people applying for a job. What the future job seeker needs to do is they have to really think about, again, back to the opening question you had, which is, which company culture do I really want to work in, and how do I find people that work there that can get me in the future? So if you're desperate for a job now and you only got 3 months before your cash balance in the bank is zero, you can't really apply this strategy. If you're in Europe right now and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to move to China in 6 months, then you can say, well, how can I find somebody in Alibaba in Europe that can tell me about how to get a job in Alibaba in China and what positions are possible for me to work there? And so then you start using social media to keep that person aware that you exist and that you're interested in working there. So that would mean, I meet Shlomo, and I know Shlomo's got this company in Beijing, and every 3 weeks I'm sending Shlomo some information, and Shlomo goes, oh, wow, Gerald sent me this. This is cool. And I remember it. And so after 2 or 3 months, if somebody says, hey, Shlomo, do you know anybody in Shanghai that can do social influencing? Shlomo's going to go, oh, yeah, that guy, Gerald. Whereas all the other coaches he might meet and connect with on LinkedIn will never send him anything and will never say anything to him between now and the next time they see a status update. And they don't even pay attention to that. So that's how that kind of works. You have to really be thinking about, okay, here's the top 3 companies I want to work for. What positions are in those companies? So if you're looking at automotive, you might look at Brose, you might look at other companies, and you might say, okay, so here are the 3 companies I do want to work for. Here's the 4 companies that I would not want to work for, and start to try to find people that you could connect with on LinkedIn, and then move forward and say, okay, well, now I've got their attention and I'm communicating with them, and hopefully they'll call me when something comes up.
I see. Okay. By the way, you also mentioned it on your TEDx recording. I watched it yesterday. It's great. So we're also going to put that on the show notes afterwards so people can hook in and watch that as well. Okay. I want to talk a little more about the job market. At this time, relating more for foreign talents already in China or seeking for a job in China, just like you just mentioned. But the thing is that it feels that foreign talents are becoming less and less relevant for Chinese companies, and the job market is changing either because of regulation and competition for overseas Chinese going to study abroad and then come to China. And obviously they then speak good English and Chinese, and they can do the job probably much better. So how do you see this market, or this, how do we leave the opportunities still open for foreigners?
Well, that's a tough one. First off, I want to clarify I think the whole market misuses the word talent. And I have an article on my LinkedIn profile called the Managing Talent or something about how to word talent. And so we misuse the word talent too much, okay? I'm sorry to say this, but probably none of us are talent. We're talented in some ways, but we're not talent. Talent to me is somebody that actually makes a difference in the environment at a very, very high level. So Michael Jordan was talent. Beethoven was talent. Willie Mays was talent. You know, Steve Jobs was talent. You know, people like that are talent. You know, they really make a big difference in the world, and everybody knows they've made a big difference. Most of us are just above average or better than above average in the workforce. And so if you think of a bell curve, you know, you have the back end of the bell curve, whereas your underperformers, and the right side or your bell curve is the high performers. You only have 5 to 10% of the people in the market that are accelerate. And those people that accelerate end up being GMs and CEOs. And, you know, there's not really that many CEOs in the world when you look at a work population of 2.6 billion people or more. That number could be higher. So then when you come down to China and the China workforce is full of people that think they're talented, and actually they're just average. And, you know, the Chinese government is getting ready to lay off between 2 to 6 million people in the next 3 years minimum. They're going to start in the steel industry and then move to the coal industry. And there's a really good article on Knowledge at Wharton that came out last Friday about this trend. So, you know, if the Chinese government is going to get rid of 3 million jobs a year from state-owned enterprises that are underperforming, and they have 7 million college graduates entering the workforce per year, you know, I don't think there's room for expat talent coming into China with no job skills. So if you're a college graduate from overseas, and if you're not going to be a French teacher or an English teacher or an Italian teacher, you're going to have it pretty hard. Cracking the market is going to be tough. unless you bring something that China wants. And what does China want? They want inflowing capital investment. So if you can come to China and say, I'm going to bring 100,000 USD and start a company, they will be more receptive to that than if you say, I'm coming to China and I have, you know, 5,000 renminbi and at the end of the month I'm broke. They're going to be like, oh, well, you know, your opportunities are going to be short. So the regulations are changing. You never know which way the regulations are blowing. You know, you see, oh, we want to make it easier for foreigners. And what the regulation is, how the regulation is implemented is always much tougher. So it's very easy to say, oh, they have a new policy that says we want to ease. And that comes from, say, the municipal government or the provincial government. But when you walk into the office and say, can I have a visa and a work permit? Yeah. They turn around and look at the guidelines and regulations and say, well, you don't meet the guidelines and regulations. Get out. Or, you know, right. Or you're not qualified.
So it's actually a recent thing.
Yeah, it's a recent thing. So they're talking at both sides of the coin. We want you here if you're going to bring something special. If you don't have anything special, we're not really sure we want you. Because, like I said, you know, they're going to have to fill 10 million jobs a year with a slowing economy. And, you know, if the state-owned enterprises are going to let people go, then there's going to be – then who knows what the private enterprises are going to do. So that's going to be really tough as well to get a job here. I would recommend that if you want to come to China, the best bet – is to be ready to study for 2 to 3 years and learn the language, because there's too many expats in China that have language skills already, and you can't compete with them. If you don't have Chinese language skills, you haven't met the basic requirement for competing with in the workforce, regardless of whether or not you want to work for a Chinese company or a multinational. If you don't have Chinese language skills, forget it. You're behind the curve. It's like I've said to some people. They go, oh, I got really good English skills. I want to go to the United States and work. And I'm like, your English skills in the United States are not a competitive advantage. You come to China without Chinese language skills, you have no, you don't meet the basic requirements. So the foreign candidates that want to be relevant for Chinese companies, they need to have some good connections back home, and they need to be able to speak Chinese.
Okay, so we're close to finishing, Gerald, but just tell our listener, what would be the best way then to get in touch with you, your LinkedIn, email, website, whatever you think, and we're also going to put that in the show notes so people can reach out to you.
Okay, sure. The best way to get in touch with me is to view my profile on LinkedIn. Just look up Gerald Bonner and ask me to connect with you. And when you ask me to connect with you, make sure you say, Gerald, we heard you on the podcast with Shlomo and Michael and at the China Business Cast website, and say what you want to ask me. If you just hit connect and you don't write my name and you don't tell me you heard this podcast, I will probably reject you, because I'm pretty good at filtering out people that are just looking to raise numbers. So that's the best way. My email address can be found on my LinkedIn profile page. So that's how you know it. And there is the company website called sharpeningaxes.com. But the best way to get in touch with me is through LinkedIn. I'm a big fan of LinkedIn. And I think what they do is unique to the market, and they're going to have a competitive edge for quite some time.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Shlomo. It's a pleasure talking to you guys, and look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Be in touch. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Doing business in China is a complex world. You can quickly feel alone and lost in its maze. But don't worry. China Business Cast is here for you. Sign up for our newsletter and regular updates on our website at www.chinabusinesscast.com. Thanks for tuning in.